Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, here with your hosts, Jacob Smedley,
Sam Best,
Justin Reedhammer,
Peter Amarante,
and Nathan Romanoff.
Our topics today include the spring madness of baseball, getting ready for opening day, and also free agency in football. Guys switching teams all over the place. But first, Sam Betts, what do you have for us?
So, Jake, man, it's been a while since we've had an episode here. I feel like we say that all the time. But, hey, we're back, and there's no time like the present. So what we're talking about today in baseball, we got spring breakout, a new kind of different thing from the MLB, getting some of the youngest stars in the field right now, getting them on the big stage, a lot of top prospects playing. And so what is that? Well, so the MLB came up with a new idea for the spring breakout. What it is, it's having a bunch of the top prospects from each teams kind of playing up against each other. This was between March 14th and actually just ended today at the time of this recording, which was the 17th. Each of those, through the 4 days, the MLB had a bunch of players go up against each other from different teams. They had the schedule out, and I'm actually going to pull it up here so I can tell you. They had like Cincinnati Reds against the Texas Rangers. They had all the teams who were in like their actual leagues, like the Grapefruit League, and then also like the Arizona League too. So they didn't have anyone cross leagues, which actually probably in the future would be pretty cool if they would do that. But another suggestion for another time. But they had the White Sox and the Cubs, which actually that game was rained out and they actually didn't play it. And I don't think they're thinking of making that up, which is kind of unfortunate. But they had the Diamondbacks and the Rockies. They had the Orioles and the Pirates, which was actually a really good matchup. And we'll talk about why here in a little bit. They had the Phillies and the Tigers, but a couple other teams that played throughout these past 4 days, and some pretty good games too. So why is the MLB doing this? It's basically just to get exposure for all these top prospects. A lot of guys from the top 100 MLB pipeline lists were on it. I believe 71 of the top 100 prospects actually played in these games, which is good. And then I think a lot of the MLB pipeline does the top 30 prospects for each team, and a lot of those prospects also played too. Now, a couple of them didn't just because of reasons with the team or maybe some injuries and stuff like that, but a lot of these top prospects for each of these teams were able to play and kind of show off their stuff. I want to talk about this Orioles and Pirates game. Two of the top players here, two number one overall draft picks, Jackson Holliday of the Orioles and Paul Skeens of the Pirates went up against each other. Paul kind of got the best of Jackson there. He was struck him out. In fact, Paul had six of his first 11 pitches in the first inning over 100 miles an hour. So like I said, top guys showing off their stuff, and Paul really showed off his fastball there. But it was kind of also just like a really cool thing to see a lot of these young players too. I know the Phillies had a really young catcher. I can't think of his name right now, but I think he was born in 2006.
2006, Sam. That is insane.
That makes me feel really old. But like I said, it was guys from all – it wasn't just any particular just like AAA guys or AA guys. It was guys from all levels, from rookie ball to the Dominican Summer League all the way up to AAA. So having a mix of these top prospects kind of showing off their skills was actually really cool to see. Jake, what do you think about this spring breakout? Do you have any things you want to mention?
Yeah, I did not know that it actually had a name, Sam. I was looking on like the MLB app just a few days ago, just like seeing the scores and the teams playing and stuff. And I saw like Phillies prospects versus Tigers prospects. I was like, what is going on? They've never done this before. I'm glad there's a name to it and I can put that together. But as soon as you were talking about it, it sounds like this the NBA-like summer league type of thing. Something like that, where you get to see these younger players in action against one another, and you get that development against these guys who played against each other in college, and you get that development. I saw a picture of Aiden Miller, the Phillies' recent draft pick, along with Max Clark, I believe his name was, for the Tigers. They did a fun jersey picture after the game. I think it's great for the game. And it's a way to get these guys acclimated to the game, trying to simulate it the best as you can as spring training. And I think it's a great thing. Hopefully they can continue to grow it. And hopefully maybe this is something that can speed up the pipeline for some of these guys from, single A, double A, some of these lower levels up through the levels through playing in these types of games very early on.
Oh, definitely, Jake. And I think this is definitely kind of more of that summer, like summer league type vibe. Obviously, for spring training, they do have a minor league camp and a big league camp, and they'll switch between a lot of the players will switch between that big league and minor league camp. The big league camp will call up some of the guys from minor league camp so that they can play in some of the spring training games. These were all just like big prospects kind of just playing against each other, which was really nice because it kind of keeps them still on that same level, but it also kind of gives them a taste to be the stars of the show essentially for one day. And there were a lot of really good jersey pictures. I know Austin Martin of the Twins, and then again, there was a guy from the Rays who they both played for Vanderbilt. I don't remember the other guy's name from the Twins, but again, a lot of good jersey pictures. There were probably two or three that I saw. So that was just kind of like a nice little moment between former teammates. And like I said, guys show off their skills. There were a couple differences. I think these were only like 7-inning games unless the teams like agreed to make it like a 9-inning game. So again, just kind of like a small like little showcase thing. They had the automated ball and strike challenge, so like the catcher would be able to challenge like a ball or a strike call.
I want to ask you guys a question about that. I want to know your thoughts on that automated challenge rule. I have my own thoughts, but I want to know you guys' thoughts on this. Because I saw this for the first time the other day, and then I wasn't aware that it was a coming thing, and I was like, wait, the catcher challenged a spot of the ball? Like, that's a football thing, but what are you guys' thoughts?
One ball or strike call could change the game, could change the way of the game possibly. But I think doing something like that, like kind of takes out a lot of the like it does take out a lot of the human error. I'm gonna use like quotes with that because it's sometimes it is hard like judging that. It is hard judging that ball sometimes. And like obviously as fans, you're gonna rag the umpire for missing a ball or a strike. But it takes that like human element kind of out of the game. It can like make a big change. It can make a big change. It could kind of it takes kind of like the little like luck here and there like out of the game. But it's kind of like with all like the new rule, it's kind of just with MLB kind of progressing, trying to kind of make the game more popular in a sense, trying to kind of if there's like a challenge that can change the way for a team, then it make the game more popular. I think the MLB is just kind of trying to figure that out.
I like the idea. I think there needs to be a limit, though, very similar to other sports, especially with how many pitches take place in a game. I like the idea. A counter to Sam, I still think there's human error because the umpire still has to make the original call at the end of the day, and it's still up to the catcher if he wants to even review it based on the count and based on the who's on the mound, for example. So I still think there's a lot of human elements that go into it. It's not, of course, the automated review comes into play. That's the non-human element, but there's still the human factor. There's still the umpire. They're like kind of calling the initial call. You have the review, but I think, you get five, like three or four, maybe even five at max if you win one or whatever, that per game for the catcher, for each side to kind of call that and make that decision. There has to be a limit, or even like a loss if you don't get one right. There has to be some kind of system like that.
And I'm re I have an article up right now. They're actually talking about the rule of the MLB posted an article about the rules, and actually there's a three ball strike ball limit that you could challenge. So they do have a limit on it. They do have a, which I'd
Okay.
actually which I didn't know that until I was kind of looking over stuff for the episode, and I just had the article up, and I actually wanted to double check and make sure. But yes, they do. There's a 3-ball strike call limit.
That's good. I was gonna be a little hesitant with this because I'm like, okay, you could be a catcher and frame everything. You're like, no, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. And then because this whole purpose of the pitch clock was to speed the game up, now you're adding in an element that they have to challenge a pitch, and you have to go look at the hit track, and you have to go like, you're adding more time back to the time that you're trying to take away. Like, you know, you're trying to speed it up. Now you're adding more time. So I'm glad they actually have a limit to this. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with the pros. But I agree with you, Jake. I think that, like football, I think that if you challenge a pitch and you get it wrong, you lose a challenge, or you take an automatic strike, or something has to be a consequence of that missed call, in my opinion, to limit the teams using it as a crutch, if I can phrase that correctly.
Yeah, I agree with that, Peter.
I agree with that too. Kind of if we're just moving on here, I just want to mention a couple of things. There were a couple of cool instances throughout some of these games. I think it's Diane Jorge. It's DYAN of the Rockies. He had Louis Vuitton cleats, and those things looked fresh. They really did. With the purple, they were purple. They had the Louis Vuitton like logos on them. They looked fresh. I just wanted to throw that out there. I thought they looked cool. But yeah, I think this is something that the MLB is going to keep. I would love to see. I would love to go to one of these games. I think when the Phillies played, they were at the Tiger Stadium. So the Phillies play the spring breakout game at their home stadium in Clearwater. I might try to get tickets to go there, but hopefully, but we'll see. But other than that, Jake, that's all I got. I just kind of wanted to mention the spring breakout that I really liked it, and I'm hoping to see more from it.
There we go. Sam is going to spring. Get Sam to spring breakout, everyone. He already had spring break, but he's going to spring breakout. We do not have the funds for that, but if you donate to Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, that we don't have a donation for. But anyways, let's get Sam to spring breakout. Anyways, moving on. Justin, we've got some action all across the NFL world. Free agency opened up just during this past week. Guys could start talking to teams. There was some conversations before the actual deadline and extensions and franchise tags and all that. Guys on the move, what is the latest?
Thank you, Jacob. Now, before we get to all the signings and everything, I just wanted to quickly mention the fact that we also got some big time retirements as well. We had the likes of Fletcher Cox from the Eagles staying along the Eagles track as well. We had their longtime center, Jason Kelce. And then, of course, the all-time great Aaron Donald, defensive tackle for the Los Angeles Rams, retired as well. And it's sad to see them go, but I know that for a fact these guys are going to be first ballot Hall of Famers, and I wish them luck in their next endeavors.
Yeah, I agree, Justin. Two of them coming from my favorite team, the Eagles, in Cox and Kelce. Both of them have been, I guess, a staple for the team on the championship team, and really embodied the Philadelphia mindset. Just focusing on them, get to Donald in a second, but Fletcher Cox was at the Phillies celebration last season when they were going to just they celebrated the teams of Philadelphia as much as anyone, and as much as any Philadelphia athlete that I have seen in recent years, and now in years being a student there and watching the teams on from a closer view. And you know, it's going to be those are two leaders in that locker room, and we'll see how the Eagles adjust from there. And then Aaron Donald, that was shocking. I saw the video, saw his note as well, and it just incredible. Also a Super Bowl champion, one of the most dominant defensive linemen in the history of the sport. Debates can take that any way you want, but I mean, shocking, but those guys have been in the league for a while and have been to the mountaintop.
I want to add on to what Jake said here really quickly. I mean, as an Eagles fan as well, I watched Jason Kelce's retirement speech, which any loving Philly fan who watched that speech either cried or got chills. It brought chills to my spine the whole time. I was like frozen. I was I there was some warning signs. I will say that we weren't blindsided by it, but it's so shocking. And then watching his retirement speech, reading Fletcher Cox's retirement letter, and reading Aaron Donald's retirement letter, all these guys, you could tell, took their sport very seriously, and it was everything to them. I mean, these guys devoted their lives, their time, their effort, everything they had to their respective positions in their sport. And I mean, as football fans in general, I think we can all appreciate how much that these three guys especially have given us to watch and to talk about on this show, on this podcast. And shout out to those three guys. Thanks to them. Thanks to them, and good luck to them.
All right. Now let's move on to the free agent moves. I'll be honest, I didn't take any notes because I was working today. So
no notes.
Unprepared. So unprepared.
So I got a
Good
website
thing I got
pulled
you.
For
up
shame,
here. I
Justin.
got a
For
website pulled
shame.
up here. I'm just gonna run down through. So that's why we're starting with the very top, the best team in the league, the Buffalo Bills, of course. I'm just starting there because really we only had one significant signing. It was Curtis Samuel signing a 3-year deal, $30 million contract. I think that's a huge signing for Buffalo, really. It takes care of the one need that we had in the offensive position, which was wide receiver. I still think we're going to spend a draft pick there at some point, but probably not in the first or second round because of the signing of Curtis Samuel. He's going to be a good replacement, I think, for Gabe Davis.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think that's a good move by Buffalo there to put someone back in that Davis spot where Davis went to Miami.
No, Jacksonville.
Oh, Jacksonville, correct. Sorry. But yeah, no, I think Curtis Samuel's a good guy to put in that wide receiver position. He's shown his worth and his value in Washington, being that number two target for Sam Howell, and he's shown that he could do breakout moves. So I think that's a pretty good signing for Buffalo, especially like you said, Justin, when they needed to fill that vacancy, they filled it with I think a pretty solid guy.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Good signing for Buffalo, like you said. Filled their biggest need on offense, on the offensive side of the ball, with the departure of Gabe Davis, and they got a pretty solid replacement, Curtis Samuel. Like Peter said, solid receiver. I think he'll be a solid second option to Stephon Diggs next season.
I'm going to keep it going. I agree. I really think this was a good start. Very intrigued to see how the Bills manage the other side of the ball. I'm sure we'll get to that discussion. A lot of guys were cut because of budgetary constraints, but on the offensive side, they used that money that maybe could have gone to Gabe Davis or someone else on a line spot and picked a great player in Curtis Samuel. Yeah, as you guys have mentioned, had a good year with Washington, and I think can fit alongside a great wide receiver like Diggs and be that complement on the outside and in the slot.
Speaking of players being cut from Buffalo's secondary, Jordan Poyer signed a 1-year deal with the Miami Dolphins of all teams. Why, Jordan? Why?
I saw it. I was like, yeah, that's Justin is not gonna like that.
Yes, Jordan Poyer, he goes to the Dolphins. Good signing for them, though. He's really just a bridge player for them. I'm not sure how much longer he wants to play in the NFL, but he's still playing at a very high level, and I think that he will perform for them next season.
Yeah, I mean, hey, where better place to go than Miami? I mean, complete switching the weather there, Buffalo to Miami. I don't blame him. I don't blame
Better
him, you know.
quarterback maybe too.
Let's start. Don't start talking here, Jake. All right, don't start talking.
Some bold statements.
Oh
All right,
my
next
God.
episode we're
That's
doing quarterback rankings so that I can get you back here.
No. It's just a joke, Justin. But yeah, I think Poyer to Miami, I think they needed a veteran in that secondary. They got Ramsey during the season. He was hurt. That secondary really fell apart towards the end of the season. You kind of saw it in that Kansas City game in the playoffs. They need a guy like him who all those years, Justin, as you know, has been one of those leaders on that Bills defense over the past few years. So the Dolphins, I think, are trying to hope that he can provide that for some of their young guys on that defense.
Yeah, then let's transition out of the AFC East, moving to the AFC North. The Baltimore Ravens will start right there with the signing of one of the best running backs in the game today, Derrick Henry, on a 2-year deal, $16 million. He's going to be paired up with Lamar Jackson in that backfield. I think that this is a good signing for them, although not sure that it was a necessary signing, but it's one that I think will definitely help their offense. Their rushing attack is going to be pretty much unstoppable next season.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with Justin. I think it's a solid signing. I mean, it's a double threat. I mean, you either got Lamar running the ball, or you got Derrick Henry running the ball. You either got a freight train coming at you, or you got a guy who's, like, all over the place with his footwork coming at you. So, I mean, the run stoppage is going to be extremely difficult for these defensive side of the ball. I think, like Justin said, I don't know how necessary it was. I mean, they didn't pay a bucket load of money for him. However, I will say, on the contrast to that, J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards have been continually getting hurt through the last few seasons. They've been up and down with injuries between the two of them, so I think that it is somebody who they're hoping that's like, okay, if we can keep him healthy and keep him consistent, he's our guy. And I hope for the best for Derrick Henry. I know he's done a lot for the city of Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee was his team to start with, and he really made his mark in that city. So I think it's a good signing, but let's hope that he can stay healthy in Baltimore.
Yeah, I echo that sentiment. I think it's a pretty good signing for the Ravens. Like you said, they're not. I don't think they're overpaying or anything like that. 2 years, $16 million, for Derrick Henry, a guy who has just been dominant in the league now for so long at that position, really offers up, as you guys said, a dual threat in that backfield with Lamar's ability to run the ball. Now you have Derrick Henry, and you know that offense already. You know, two of the best tight ends, with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, and they have Zay Flowers. So they have a very potent offense there in Baltimore. It's definitely going to be fun to watch next season with the addition of Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I think another element that I think ties into all this is the healthiness of Henry in terms of his ability, availability being one of his best abilities. Hasn't gotten hurt a lot. That Ravens running back room, it seems like every year, of course, Dobbins has been a part of that, but guys going down, they're bringing guys off the practice squad to fill that position and to have, as you mentioned, Justin, in the open for this segment, one of the best running backs in the league to fill that position allows you to have those other guys as a safety blanket and not have to rely on, you know, picking guys, you know, off the practice squad to try and come in there and serve that position in big games. So that's my old thing to add on to this. Again, he's a great running back and is going to provide a great power identity to Lamar, who's kind of that other side in a triple option where he's that shifty speed threat running the ball. Gus Edwards as well, and the others in the room that add that more speed element. They need a power back, and they got it with Henry.
And I'll mention something too here. Gus Edwards actually signed with the Chargers recently. So I mean, if you're going to go out and get a running back, you might as well go get one of the top running backs in the NFL right now. Also, like as everyone said, like Lamar Jackson, the dual threat quarterback, just having another option to go into for the run game. You didn't pay a whole lot of money for him, but I think he'll give you some good runs and just kind of fill in that spot for that running back room.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how their offense moves forward with Henry now in the backfield. But I just want to quickly mention the Cleveland Browns just, you know, real quick, because I saw that they acquired Jerry Jeudy from the Broncos. I did not see that before. And, you know, maybe we can talk about that in a second. But I also just want to move over to the Pittsburgh Steelers just to say, where do I begin with the Pittsburgh Steelers? I mean,
Justin, the QB room,
yeah, maybe? Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, two quarterbacks right off the bat right there. It's both starters last year. And then Patrick Queen, the linebacker as well. And Deontay Johnson, cornerback from the Carolina Panthers. So really a plethora of moves there. They're looking to be competitive, I think, next season.
I agree with they're going to be competitive. I think their defense will be the more competitive of the two sides. They did also release their wide receiver, Deontay Johnson, this free agency. So they lost a very good receiver in that. But here's the thing. I don't know if this is 100% true, but apparently, and you guys can correct me if there's been later news, but Russell Wilson is the starter for this season. I think that was already predetermined, and then Justin Fields was going to, I think the quote was that Russ would be the starter and that Fields would learn from Russ for the year that he's there. I mean, Steeler Nation, let's ride, right? I mean, like, but no, I mean, I just
have fun.
Here's the thing.
Have fun, Steeler Nation.
I mean, here's the thing. Patrick Queen is an amazing defensive player. He has proven that in Baltimore. I think the Steelers defense is stacked up. If that defense can stay healthy, they are stacked up, and they will be forced to be reckoned with. However, it'll be very interesting to see what Arthur Smith does, their new OC, with Russell Wilson, with Najee and Jalen Warren, and with George Pickens. It'll be very interesting to see what the Steelers do with these new weapons. But I agree in the sense that they are a force to be reckoned with on the defensive side. I'm not so much convinced on the offensive side quite yet.
I'll just say this real quick, especially as it pertains to a Mr. Russell Wilson. I don't think by any means that Russ is a horrible, like, completely trash quarterback at this point. He can still produce. However, he just did not fit in Denver, and I do think he's past his prime. I don't know how it's going to work in Pittsburgh. As you guys said, I mean, they lost Deontay Johnson. Their offense wasn't great last year. Got a little better when Mason Rudolph came in. I don't expect them to be great this year, to be quite frank. I don't think, you know, Russ is going to be some savior. Definitely wasn't for the Broncos, as we all saw. But it was a good move for them, considering the Broncos are paying $38 million to Russell Wilson, and the Steelers only paying, like, 1.2. So that was good. As you said, the defense is stout. I mean, they have stars all over that defensive side of the ball. So they're definitely going to be one of the best defenses in the league. We've come to expect that from the Steelers now. It'll be interesting to see how they fall in the AFC. It'll be, you know, competitive as usual, and I'm sure they'll be in a mix there for one of those wild card or playoff spots next year.
Yeah, I'll kind of take a different approach to the Steelers offseason so far. Arthur Smith, Peter, hopefully, you know, he's not a Russell Wilson type. We saw what happened in Atlanta, and the reason why they let him go as the head coach. We'll see how he does with Pittsburgh with Russell Wilson. But I'm looking at Kenny Pickett, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a little bit. But going to the Eagles, the faith that they had, if they knew that they were trading for Justin Fields just days later, clearly gave up on him and gave him up for, you know, just picks to get him in it, because Fields is literally replacing him as the backup to Russell Wilson. So very interesting how they went about that. In agreement, I think the offense is going to still have to kind of slog its way through games and try and find different avenues for scores, especially with Deontay Johnson out. I think he's going to Carolina, was in that Johnson for Johnson swap. But yeah, that defense, I think Patrick Queen can stabilize things in the middle, and another Johnson on the edge. So I think the defensive unit will be strong, just very interested in that QB swap. Is this a placeholder? Is this getting Fields ready? It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it certainly will be. I'll be honest, I'm not exactly sure what the plan is, but they have to have a plan if they made a move like this, so we'll have to just wait and see. Moving into the AFC South here, we got a couple of moves going on. Joe Mixon got moved to the Texans from the Cincinnati Bengals in a trade, only for a seventh rounder, but they were going to release him anyway, if you remember the reports for that. So I think that they were just happy to get anything they could get. And then Jacksonville, of course, acquiring Mac Jones, Gabriel Davis, Mitch Morse, Eric Armstead. They made so many moves, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that their season ended so disappointedly last year, as we were mentioning just before the podcast started. So I think that they're really looking to beef up every aspect of their team to make sure that that doesn't happen again and that they make it to the playoffs next year.
Yeah, it looks like Peter's having some technical difficulties, so I'll take the reins first. Very interested to see the Jaguars motive, like you said, Justin. A lot of guys coming in. Gabe Davis, who we mentioned earlier, hopefully giving Trevor Lawrence another option, and Mac Jones. Very interesting there. A project guy who was with New England, didn't work out. Maybe trying to get him in a backup role to learn a new system. And, if Trevor Lawrence goes down, he can maybe take the reins there. But, I see kind of what they're doing. They're trying to address the trenches with Morris and get some more skill guys. But I really enjoy what the Texans did. And they lost some guys to free agency. They added in Al Shazier, I think his name is. Sorry if I apologies if I butchered his name by any means, but the guy linebacker from San Francisco that was in the same system with D'Amico Ryans. They added guys to supplement their losses. And Joe Mixon, a guy that's still a solid running back. He's no longer, I think, that top 15 or even at times top 10 guy, but still a guy that can help out a young CJ Stroud who took the NFL world by storm. So I think both teams are trying to duke it out for that top spot. I'm really impressed with the Texans.
Yeah, I thanks Jake for taking that. I was having some mic problems there, but I will say that, addressing the Jags first, I think that Gabe Davis is a good wide receiver to have to run alongside Christian Kirk. Calvin Ridley was there for a year. He had his ups and downs. I mean, a lot of drops on Jacksonville last year, if you guys remember, a lot of drop passes. But I think Gabe Davis will be a nice number two for Trevor Lawrence to have, add some volume to that offense. And I think that the whole Mac Jones situation is a, I think Jakey worded it really well, the project quarterback. I think that New England system just wasn't right for Mac Jones. I don't think it was the timing for that whole scheme to fit and work out. I mean, having Josh McDaniels be your offensive coordinator, I mean, we saw how well he was as a head coach with the Raiders. It doesn't really work out with him being a coach. So I think that it'll be interesting to see what he does under Doug Peterson, who has proven to be a solid coach, who has proven to be work well with new guys, young talent, and find those talents within those young players to bring out the talent within them. So we'll see what they can do with Mac Jones. But I agree with you, Jake, a lot on the Texans situation, that they did really well with this. They lost Devin Singletary in the free agency. They brought in a veteran running back who, like you said, may not be a top 10, top 15 running back anymore because he's such a veteran, but he still has the power to power through big blocks, big rushes. So I think that it'll be interesting. And I mean, I think that, like, I it's hard to say it because you said it best. I mean, the Texans just filled all the holes where they saw it last year, and they're trying to fill in those gaps and fight for that number one spot. And I think they are dang close to getting it.
I'll be honest, I agree with what both of you said, especially Jake, when it comes to the Texans. I think that they are one of the biggest winners in free agency right now. I think they've added a lot of nice pieces to the team, to the defense. And I mean, like you said, the addition, Joe Mixon, a fine replacement for Devin Singletary, a lot of experience there coming from Cincinnati. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, they also added Danielle Hunter to their defense. So that is a huge pickup. He had a monster season for the Vikings last year. I think that they're continuing to build with that young core they have with CJ Stroud on the offensive side of the ball. And I think that they're definitely a team to look out for going forward. For the Jaguars, not really much there. Armstead, good signing on the defensive side of the ball. Mac Jones doesn't really do much. He's coming in as a backup. Because we know Trevor Lawrence is the guy in Jacksonville. He is the franchise quarterback. That's not going to change. And then a nice signing there with Gabe Davis, to replace the outgoing Calvin Ridley. So some good moves in the AFC South.
Yeah, then speaking of Calvin Ridley, I just want to mention two more teams here on the AFC and then we'll move to the NFC. But Calvin Ridley signs with the Tennessee Titans. And as well, Tony Pollard to replace Derrick Henry signs with the Tennessee Titans. We'll get to the Cowboys, of course, later, but I also wanted to quickly mention that the Las Vegas Raiders signed Christian Wilkins, formerly of the Miami Dolphins. Very good signing for them. He's going to really boost that defensive line play.
Tony Pollard going to Tennessee, I think, is great. I think it's a good signing for them. I think that for anyone to replace Derrick Henry, having a young talent like Tony Pollard was a really good idea for them. I mean, we saw what he could do in Dallas. I mean, behind Zeke. I think I like the signing. Calvin Ridley, I hope he finds better success in Tennessee than he did Jacksonville. I think that having a fresh quarterback with Will Levis and being alongside DeAndre Hopkins, I mean, that's a huge threat right there in and of itself. But yeah, and the Wilkins signing on the Raiders, hopefully that the Raiders can start their rebuild now that they're kind of getting that coaching situation figured out, and hopefully that the Raiders have a calm year for once. You know, no craziness with the coaching, no craziness with the players having incidents. Just a calm year for the Raiders would be nice.
Yeah, I'm going to focus on that Wilkins point, Peter. And I really like what Antonio Pierce is doing with the Raiders. I think this is a start to trying to change that culture that's built on that Raiders toughness and what they, you know, what they thrived on in the 80s and the 90s and what got them to a lot of those Super Bowls and at the top of the AFC was toughness and the continuity of the team. And I really enjoyed what I saw from them last season, nearly getting them into a playoff spot. I think this signing really helps them in the D-line. It really helps someone outside of Max Crosby, who's been one of the best players in the league on the defensive side. You add Wilkins in the center, they need a run stopper. And I think he provides that, provides stuff on the pass rush as well. And you look at the two guys for Tennessee. I mean, they need more weapons, especially for Will Levis. Again, we don't know. Tannehill, you guys correct me. I didn't see anything of him moving. Haven't been up to date with every single move. But I feel like he is, again, still there just helping Levis. It will be Levis's team. And you see a lot of these teams with younger quarterbacks. I'm sure we'll get to the Bears in a second. Building around their young quarterback. Taking the blueprint from some of these other teams like the Eagles, like the 49ers, like some of these other teams. Look at the success that these teams are having when you build around and give weapons to a young quarterback to succeed and let him grow with them.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Jake. I mean, it's proven that when you give, you know, especially young quarterbacks, the weapons necessary on the offensive side of the ball, that success can and will come with, you know, proper coaching and mixed in as well. I love the Tony Pollard signing. Great replacement for Derrick Henry. Calvin Ridley, good signing. I don't know if I would have paid that much for him. But he's, you know, still a good receiver. And, you know, he's obviously happy to be going there. He'll be a great target for Will Levis and hopefully help him in his continual development. And like you said, Christian Wilkins, fantastic signing on the defensive side of the ball for the Las Vegas Raiders, pairing him with Max Crosby. That'll be a fun defense to watch next year, so good signing there.
All right, we'll move over to the NFC side of things, and okay, let's just get through this one. Peter, try to keep your talk under a minute here, all right? I'm talking about the Philadelphia Eagles now. All right, they got Kenny Pickett from the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got running back Saquon Barkley on a 3-year deal from the Giants. Great signing there. Devontae Parker agreed to a 1-year deal as well. And they got Bryce Huff from the Jets, the edge rusher, signing a 3-year contract as well. And Devin White, too, linebacker, 1-year deal there. They got a lot of really good pieces here. I think that they're plugging a lot of the holes that were created, whether it was from retirements or from people just leaving or, you know, people not performing last year. So I think that they're kind of reloading this offense, getting back to the point where they're going to be the next contender for a Super Bowl.
All right. I'm going to take this from an unbiased standpoint. I would say, first off, that I mean, I'm an Eagles fan, so obviously I'm excited about all these signings, but I think that having Saquon Barkley...
Peter, I'm timing you, by the way. Keep it at a minute. Keep it at a minute, Peter. I'm timing you.
Having Saquon Barkley that good of a line, I mean, you can see his stats behind the line. I mean, he's a phenomenal runner. when he has a terrible offensive line. I mean, imagine what he could do with a great offensive line. So I think that's a really good signing. And having it for long term also really helps, because having a running back for a longer time helps him develop with the team. I think that Bryce Huff will be a great edge rusher. I think that he showed that, proved that on the Jets. Having Devin White at the linebacker position fills that hole. Nicholas Morrow really needed to go, so I think that it's a good signing, and I think that he'll develop a lot better than he did in Tampa Bay. And, I mean, you forgot one about C.J. Gardner-Johnson coming back to Philly. I think that's an amazing comeback. Super happy for him and getting a good contract. And then lastly, bringing Kenny Pickett. I mean, we'll see how that works. I mean, he's a young quarterback. I think he has more potential in Philly than he did with Pittsburgh. I think that he'll grow and learn under Jalen Hurts. And if Hurts was to go down, I think Kenny could take up where he needs to be. So there's my take.
Minute 22, ladies and gentlemen. He went over. Sorry, Peter. But great analysis, Peter, as he is giving us the bird for those not watching the behind the scenes that will come out later on. But Peter, I agree. I think those are, and Justin as well, I think those are great, good moves by the Eagles. Good, great for some of them. Love the Saquon deal. Nervous about the money just because of the injury concern. Yeah. I see Peter mocking me. Justin said the time. I started the timer. I wanted to see. I haven't seen you go under 5 minutes, sir. But I'm just going to keep it brief. Gardner Johnson said he hated Philly fans when he comes back. And it's like, okay, thank you. Thanks for coming back, I guess. So they needed secondary help. Devin White, I think, see how his age is. I like the signing, but he's don't want it to turn to another Shaq Leonard where he's out there and he's not the same player that he was at all. I still think he's going to be productive and really fill a spot of need, but really enjoying the offseason for the Eagles so far.
I think it's been a good offseason for the Eagles, as we've said. Saquon, you know, Penn State boy, coming back to PA, you know. I think that Eagles fans, you know, pretty happy about that. Giants fans, not so much. But, you know, hey, man, it's a business, you know. The NFL's a business, so that's just how it goes. Good signing. Eagles, as you said, Justin, looking like to be one of the top contenders once again in the NFC this year.
Yeah, speaking of the Eagles, we'll talk about their former running back DeAndre Swift getting signed by the Chicago Bears. Chicago Bears also getting Keenan Allen as well. They are building for the next guy. They've made it pretty clear what they're going to do after the trade of Justin Fields. They're going to be selecting Caleb Williams in the draft. I know what the next episode we probably do is going to be a draft special. We're all going to be picking Caleb Williams to go there. So it's like you said, they're building for the future there. They're really making sure that they have the pieces in place to have the offense necessary to compete in the league.
Keenan Allen, if he can stay healthy, will be a great veteran weapon for this new quarterback to come into Chicago. I think that DeAndre Swift, I mean, he proved it in Philly. He proved it in Detroit. When he's healthy, when he's got a good opening, he's a breakout running back. So we'll see what Chicago can do there. And yeah, I mean, like Justin said, I think that they're building for the future, so hopefully I don't screw it up because you lost Justin Fields in a trade. So
he better be the guy based on all the stuff he said at the combine. I mean, that's a quick aside, folks. I know we're talking about teams here. But he went up there, didn't do a medical, and he treated it like a paparazzi visit. Like he was just answering questions. I wish him nothing but the best. He's, again, as you said, Justin, most likely going to the Bears number one, but at just that sign, just like, come on, go through the participation, you know, treating it that way. Now, hopefully he succeeds. The Bears are setting him up for success right here. They're giving, like I mentioned earlier, giving him weapons to start out with. And going back to that point to expand on it, it helps these guys who had all of these extremely talented players in college, I feel like, adjust to the professional game easier, especially when the speed of the game ramps up. you have other talented guys like you did in college to help you. And of course, the coaches have a big part in that. But, you know, I'm rooting for Caleb Williams, but just some of the things he has done from the leading from USC into the combine have just started to raise some questions with me about him as a person, maybe off the field, and how that could translate to on the field to Chicago, who's a team that's striving to get back to winning.
Calling him a bit of a diva there, Jake, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying,
I feel
like
that's something.
Please tell me I'm not the only one who, I mean, I read this to Sam earlier. Please tell me I'm not the only one who saw that he expects the Bears to harvest lower priority player organs for him.
What?
Did you guys read that? Adam Schefter tweeted it out. He said that, quote, if I could find it, if I can find this quote, Nate, after you say your bit, I'll read it out. It's
Peter, you look for this and see if you can find this. But yeah, anyway, despite his potential off-the-field issues, it's clear Caleb Williams, the talent, the football player, is the number one pick in this year's draft. He is going to be the guy next year in Chicago. And as you said, I mean, they have set him up for, you know, success, offensively speaking. He's got DJ Moore. They add Keenan Allen. They've got DeAndre Swift in the backfield. I mean, this is a pretty stacked offensive side of the ball. And he's going to come in and have those weapons that he, you know, that he had some early in college. And we're going to see if he's going to be able to produce. A lot of people are saying, you know, he could be a generational talent at the quarterback position. We'll see. Everybody's going to have some adjustment period come to from college to the NFL. But like you said, adding those pieces definitely makes it easier for him. And hopefully, you know, those off-the-field issues don't, actions of his continue. Hopefully he settles down once the draft is over and everything's clear. But it should be an exciting time to be a Chicago Bears fan.
I got the quote.
Oh, God. Wow.
Per Adam Schefter, if I get drafted by the Bears, they should be harvesting lower priority players' organs for me because I'm worth it. End quote. Caleb Williams.
All right. Well, let me now run through a couple of running back signings here because we had a big running back derby going on throughout the entire free agency. Josh Jacobs, he goes over to the Green Bay Packers. Austin Eckler to the Commanders. And then, of course, Aaron Jones to the Vikings, switching up with from the Packers as well. Big signings there. A little odd, to be honest, that all these running backs are kind of making the run to different teams. But I think it's going to be good for these guys to, I guess, shake it up. Some of them having success, others not so much. Mainly Austin Eckler. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think that, you know, I think Austin Eckler definitely had a down year last year, prior from the year before where he broke out completely in L.A. But it'll be interesting to see what he does for Washington. He will definitely be a staple on that Washington offense. I mean, they're going to have to try to find another quarterback because Sam Howell's gone. Oh, they brought Drew Locke in, right? I thought they brought somebody in, but Austin Eckler will be a huge staple for that offense. I mean, you already got Terry McLaurin on that team, Jahan Dotson on that team. So, I mean, you got three really good offensive weapons now for that, for the whoever the quarterback's going to be for that team. And I think the Aaron Jones and the Josh Jacobs mashup is, I think it's a fresh start. I mean, I feel like the Vikings have had a lot of difficulty finding an RB running back since moving on from Dalvin Cook, you know. And I think it'll be interesting to see because Alexander Mattison wasn't quite the answer last year that they were hoping for. So we'll see if Aaron Jones can take charge of that running back position there. And for the Green Bay, I mean, Josh Jacobs, I think he's a pretty decent running back, in my opinion. I think that he can do some work for the young Jordan Love in that offense. So it'll be interesting to see what these guys do.
Yeah, I think that, you know, focusing on that Aaron Jones part, going to a division rival, I mean, he knew the writing on the wall when the Packers signed Josh Jacobs. And, you know, one of the longest-term Packers that was left on that team with all of the, you know, first and second-year wide receivers that they had. He was the one veteran that led them to that win over the Cowboys and against the 49ers. So, I mean, probably really bittersweet to see him go. But now going to Minnesota and, you know, taking a look at that team for a second, sure we'll get into the quarterback position shortly, but interesting to see how he fits into that puzzle piece offensively. Yeah, and Josh Jacobs, someone that is now going into a exciting upstart offense. He's had so many different quarterbacks that have been handing him the football. I mean, outside of Derek Carr with injuries now, he gets a guy that is a young star, like C.J. Stroud, Jordan Love, really showing out late last year, and excited to see what he brings to that offense as well.
Yeah, I mean, the running back carousel on this offseason has been quite fun to watch, to say the least. I mean, a lot of guys going to new teams. You know, it's kind of sad seeing Aaron Jones, you know, leave Green Bay the way it happened. But, hey, like we said, that's the business. And, you know, he gets a deal with the Minnesota Vikings, you know, a fresh start at a division rival. But I still think Aaron Jones is a pretty solid running back who can definitely produce for that Minnesota team. Josh Jacobs might have let me down in fantasy last year, but I still think he's a good running back. I think he'll be a good fit in Green Bay with Jordan Love in that offense. So I do like that signing for them. Austin Eckler, another guy who was a bum fantasy pick last year, going to the Commanders now. I mean, we'll see what happens there. We know they're going to be drafting a quarterback with their pick, so you know, it'll be a young upstart offense there, but definitely a good addition for them. So, yeah, it's been really interesting to see how all these running backs fare in their new teams next season.
Yeah, then as Jacob alluded to, the Atlanta Falcons signing quarterback Kirk Cousins to a massive four-year, $180 million deal with $100 million guaranteed. They're paying him like a quarterback that wins playoff games. Isn't that crazy?
Well, I mean, that's quite a move for the Falcons. I know they Desmond Ridder was moved in a corresponding move as well. I don't know. I don't know how I feel. Of course, Kirk Cousins is an upgrade from what they had. He's going to help out those young playmakers that they have, including Bijan Robinson. I really like what Arthur Morris. I think he's going to be one of those good first-year head coaches, like a D'Amico Ryans, that is going to have an impact, and they're going to win some games. Maybe they shouldn't have. But Kirk Cousins is that's a lot of money for a guy at that part of his career that, again, doesn't have those accolades that you can say, okay, I'm willing to beg at least Russell Wilson not to lope that back in, Nate. At least he had the accolades in the league that you could justify. Okay, he has done this in the league that I could justify giving him. What has Kirk Cousins done winning in the postseason, end of season awards? I know that's not the whole story, but to justify that much money.
Like you said, Russell Wilson, it was a Super Bowl winning quarterback. Kirk Cousins, you know, that is not, he's not on that level. He has not attained that level of success in the NFL or really come close, to be quite frank. I remember, you know, talking to Justin, when you found out how much money the Falcons paid him, I mean, you were in shock, I mean, to be quite honest. And I don't blame you. I mean, they really, really handed him the bag. And granted, the quarterback position has been a their biggest need in Atlanta for the past few years now. I mean, they've really needed a quarterback. So, yes, they go out and fix that problem. But is he the guy? I don't know. Some people on ESPN are saying, oh, this makes them contenders. I don't really see it, but we'll see what happens. I mean, they do have a good young offense, and they have obviously a new head coach coming in. So it'll be interesting to see. But I don't think that, as it pertains to Kirk Cousins, I don't think that much money probably should have been given to him. But they did need that. They did need a quarterback. And they went out and they got their guy. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, then let's move over to the New Orleans Saints. I just got to mention them quick because of the man that lives upstairs from my bedroom, Joe G, the fan. We got DeMario Davis signing, the linebacker, and then Tyrann Mathieu, the safety, Honey Badger, coming over from the Chiefs, or maybe not the Chiefs from last year, but Yes, it's definitely some good signings for them. They're really trying to beef up a defense that let them down last year in a division that was theirs for the taking.
I hope that the Saints can figure out their defensive struggles. I think extending Tyrann Mathieu was a good idea. The signing they made was, I think it was a good move. We'll see what happens with that. Derek Carr being there another year and then kind of getting back in the groove of things. Derek Carr's now used to the system. I think we'll see more production out of this team than we did last year, with everyone kind of being confused and new. Like, Tyrann Mathieu is new. Derek Carr was new. Jamal Williams was new. I mean, like, you got all these guys that are, like, key players that are trying to figure out their fit in this mold. And you also had those injuries. Like, I mean, Chris Olave got hurt. Alvin Kamara was suspended for X amount of games. Like, I think that this year will be a refresh button for the Saints. And I'm excited, and I'm hopeful for their sake that they take this opportunity to fix the mistakes that they made last year.
Yeah, not much to say in the Saints, really. I mean, I think some good moves on defense. I'll quickly also mention that I think that it was a good move them releasing Michael Thomas. I just think his time, had come probably to move on from him. He hasn't been producing much. He's been injured for most games. He's missed a lot of games the past 2, 3 seasons. So I think that was probably a smart decision. But yeah, some good additions on the defense side of the ball. They should be competing, for that NFC South. They should be, one of the favorites to win it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued with what the Saints have in store, Falcons as well. I know we kind of focused on Cousins specifically, but also the Bucs and the Panthers, two teams in interesting spots in that division. I like what the Panthers are doing with the new head coach that they got from the Buccaneers, who transformed Geno Smith, transformed Baker Mayfield, and a very good quarterback with Tampa Bay. And right now, a guy that they want to lead their team moving forward, seeing what he can do with Bryce Young. Worst team in the NFL. They don't even have their pick for this year's draft. I want to see what kind of magic that they can get going in Carolina potentially. But back to the Saints, again, with that in mind, you don't have that much time before some of these teams, the Buccaneers played well into the playoffs last year and won a game, despite how, poor the Eagles were at that point. They won a game and they were in it with the Lions to the very end. And the Falcons are not sitting around. They're giving $100 million to an aging quarterback who's still got it, as a matter of fact. And, the Panthers are the Panthers at this moment, that they are taking the steps to improve. So the Saints can't wait around.
Yeah, and then I'll just quickly mention one last team here, the San Francisco 49ers. They're getting a couple of key additions here on the offensive line in John Feliciano, as well as Leonard Floyd at the edge rushing position. They've just made several moves here to really bolster their offense and their defense. As I would say, the rich just keep getting richer, you know?
I think that the 49ers are just doing what they can right now to fill in those very few holes that they had last year, or those few, we'll call them even bumps in the road that they had last year, and trying to keep themselves at that number one contender in the NFC spot. I think adding Leonard Floyd was a good add for that defense, and more protection you can get on Brock Purdy, the better. Because he's still young, he's still got a lot to prove, and I think that he is day by day, game by game, proving the haters wrong. Mr. Irrelevant becoming Mr. Relevant. So, I mean, that's my take on it.
Yeah, I think it's great moves by the 49ers. They made it to the Super Bowl, but they are not content with second place. And it's great to see them making moves in. That's what makes the game great. I mean, the great teams are not just gonna sit around and wait for, guys to develop, or they can at that same point, but they're still going for it. They're going for the ultimate prize. And just as a football fan, it's great to see it. As an Eagles fan, not so much.
And that's true, Jake. But as you said, hey, teams who are actually contenders, they don't just sit around, they don't just do nothing. You know, they don't just let players walk and then not, you know, sign anybody in free agency.
Wait, wait, wait. Am I hearing Jerry Jones in the Dallas Cowboys?
I think you are, Peter.
Oh my gosh.
I was going to spare them the misery as they've already felt so
No, we don't spare them any misery.
Let me make this clear. For a team who, and I quote, this is our year. Try to keep this under a minute. I got this. If you want to say it's your year, hey, Jerry Jones, wake up from your little cat nap and start getting plays. You just lost your running back. You let go of a crap ton of players. Hey, if you want it to be your year for the 50th year in a row, you got to actually make something happen there, bud. It ain't your year, Cowboys. It's never your year.
I think that was 45 seconds, 50 seconds. I think you did it, yeah. Justin.
Good job, Peter.
We hit on the number there.
Maybe put some bets on it next time. But that'll do it for this week's edition of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast on a 2-month hiatus. We are back. Thank you for listening. Tune in to future episodes on YouTube and Spotify. We'll talk to you next time.